Good morning. I'm Holly Wantuck, and I'm going to be presenting today on my work done at NC State in Dave Tarpey's lab. And I looked at controlling Varroa destructor in honeybee colonies with limited acaricide application. So Varroa destructor is an ectoparasitic mite on both pupal and adult honeybees. On its native host, the Asian honeybee, Apis serrana, it does very little damage, but on our European honeybee, Apis mellifera, it does do a lot of harm. Parasitism greatly impacts colony health, and since its introduction in the 1980s to the U.S., it's been responsible for widespread mortality rates that have been greatly increased in both managed and feral colonies. This is largely due to the varroa mite's great capacity for vectoring viral diseases, especially deformed wing virus, QB paralysis virus, just to name a couple. And so this is a big problem. Obviously, honeybees are really important to pollination, and we rely heavily on them in agriculture. And so lots of heavy effort has been dedicated to developing control methods for varroa destructor. And in the past, this has been focused largely on synthetic acaricides, which were very effective for a time. They do come with the inherent drawbacks of residues left behind in honey and wax products, as well as increased cost to beekeepers. And they really just aren't that healthy for the bees themselves. And especially now, we're seeing increased mite resistance widespread to pretty much every chemical product that's on the market. So with this in mind, apiculture has been looking at developing control strategies that are relying less heavily on chemical controls. So to do that, we need to understand a bit about the varroa life cycle. So to begin, we start with a gravid female or founder's mite, which enters the cell of a fifth instar bee and begins to feed on the hemolymph of that developing prepupa. She enters the cell a day or two prior to cell capping, and she'll stay there waiting until about 60 hours post-capping, at which point she lays her first egg, which is a female, and roughly 30 hours later, she'll lay another egg, which is a male, and all subsequent offspring are female. She does lay all eggs at 30-hour intervals and just one at a time. The mites remain in the capped cell, feeding on hemolymph of the pupal bee, doing a lot of damage to it in the process, until they're mature, at which point all the female mites mate with their single brother mite within the capped cell, and only mature females will exit the cell with the bee upon emergence, at which point they enter a phoretic phase, during which they hitchhike on the adult bee feeding on hemolymph. And then they stay in this phase for about 6 to 7 days until the female mite is ready to hop off the bee, enter another brood cell, and begin the cycle over again. So with this in mind, it makes perfect sense that the mite prefers to parasitize drones. And drones, of course, are the male honeybees. Being much larger than the female workers, they take longer to develop. And this extra pupation time, it works out great for the mites. It allows them to have a higher reproductive potential because it gives the female mites within the cell longer to develop. So you get more adult mites emerging with the bee than you would with worker brood. So this being the case, it makes drone brood an excellent target for developing control measures against varroa. With the idea to concentrate the drone brood in discrete areas of the hive on specific frames so that it'll actually act as like a sink or a magnet to draw mites to it, and then which can then be removed from the colony, thus reducing a significant portion of the mite population in the colony. And so this has been done for some time, and the most common method of drone brood removal right now is to remove the frames and freeze them, thus killing all of the mites inside. It has in fact been shown to lower the infestation levels of mites in colonies without really compromising colony health at all, and this can be accomplished since drones really, they don't contribute really at all to the colony health or development. They're actually kind of like leeches within the colony, sapping resources. There is a major drawback, though, because the drones are important for just one thing, and that's to mate with the queen. So you do need them to sustain a healthy breeding population, which is important because you do want genetic diversity in your bee stocks. In eliminating drones, you do eliminate a great potential source of resistant alleles within a breeding population. This is with the assumption that any drones that do survive parasitism to make it to breeding age, are they going to maybe possess some resistant traits that it would be good to pass on and propagate within your bee stocks? And so, with this in mind, I've been working on developing a control method that could implement drone brood removal, but at the same time salvage the drone population. So, in my drone rescuing project, I have started with 20 hives, which have been split into three treatment groups, with two of the colonies designated as sacrificial colonies, and I'll get to that in a bit. Each colony is provided with two frames of drone comb, which is distinct from worker brood, or worker comb rather, in that it has a larger cell diameter. All colonies were equalized at the outset of the experiment with respect to honey and pollen stores, as well as with adult and brood populations. So in my treatment groups, I had a negative control group to which no mite control was applied at all. I had a positive control group to which I applied synthetic acaricides, fluvalinate strips throughout the year, or Apistan, with Apalive Var or thymol tablets at the end of the season. And then I had a third treatment group, that of drone brood removal. So I removed drone frames, which you can see here in blue, from all of the colonies. I monitored them to detect the moment when the majority of the brood present was capped over, and I was careful to not allow any drones to emerge within the colonies themselves. So the removed frames then, rather than being frozen or killed, were placed into sacrificial colonies, which is what we call the colonies we just banked all of our drone frames in. So being overloaded with drones as well as the mites that came with them, we did apply chemical acaricides to that so as to knock off the mites as soon as they emerged while allowing the drones to survive. So, like I said, everybody started with an even playing field. This is my pre-treatment brood population. You can see as far as the total frames of brood within the colonies, they were pretty similar throughout all of the treatment groups at the beginning of the experiment, as were the total frames of adult bees. So, so everybody again started out equal. And throughout the season, we actually didn't see any divergence in the adult population really between the treatment groups. Everybody pretty much stayed the same. We just see the typical rise and fall of the adult bee population that we would expect to see throughout the course of a season. Again, we have frames of bees over the course of the months of the study. And during the study, throughout the duration, I did measure mites using two of the more common mite assessment methods. I did powdered sugar shakes, to which you apply powdered sugar to bees in a jar to dislodge mites, which can then be counted. I also performed sticky board traps, during which adhesive boards were placed on the bottom of the colony to catch fallen mites over a 24-hour period. And these I correlated with the adult bee population within the colonies during at the time of each measurement. And this was done so that I would get an accurate bee to mite ratio using both methods throughout the course of the study. So in looking at my sugar shake counts, you can see the mite counts. At the outset of the study, they all started out roughly equal. Everybody was very low. And until you get to about June, where we started to see a divergence, and you could see a significant reduction in the drone brood removal group as compared to the negative control group. And this wobbled a little bit throughout July. Again, we see some significant difference in August, with the effects being more muted towards the end of the fall when the drone production actually falls off. So, and with the sticky board counts, again, I measured this with the mites per frame of bees so as to correlate it with adult populations. And we see about the same thing. We start out with really low mite counts in the early season. We see a significant difference again in July with drone brood removal counts being much lower than the negative control group, which continues through August. And again, we tend to lose that effective treatment at the beginning of fall. And as far as post-treatment strengths, everybody pretty much ended up the same. We had very similar colony weight changes throughout the season. And also we ended up with very similar brood populations at the end of the season as well, so nobody was greatly harmed over the course of this study. And so in conclusion, the drone brood removal did successfully lower mite counts throughout the season. This is really important because it did allow us to forgo the what's typically a recommended miticide treatment in the beginning of the spring to control varroa throughout the season. So we have successfully decreased those mite counts throughout the course of the summer until about late fall or early fall, where we did see the mite counts start to climb again. Drone brood removal again didn't decrease colony strength, and so I would suggest it as an excellent element of an integrated pest management control strategy, one that could be implemented easily by hobbyist beekeepers, which we do have a lot of in North Carolina, and so that way we could reap the benefits of any drone brood removal treatments while salvaging drones in the process and bolstering our breeding populations. So I would like to thank everybody from my lab and my committee, and also all of the funding I got from the Fellowship of the North Carolina Agricultural Foundation, the NCSBA, and the Southern Region Integrated Pest Management Center. Thank you. Yes.
It looks like in your last slide that maybe there was an increase in productivity or colony weight in the colonies that have had the drone. Is it removing the drone and helping them not producing the drone?
Mm-hmm. So, I'm sorry, your question was?
So your last slide where you showed the weight gain in the colonies, the ones that have had the drone had gained more weight, even though it wasn't statistically significant. Did you feel like maybe removing the drones helps?
Yeah, so the question is, does removing drones help increase the productivity of colonies? And yeah, it really does. That's been shown, and again, that's because drones, when they're present, they sap off resources rather than contributing anything, so they will consume a lot of honey. And so yeah, that is true. And we did have a trend that the drone brood removal colonies tended to be have increased weight gain. Wasn't statistic though, but yeah.
All right, thank you, Holly.
Thank you.